It's a little after midnight at Mountain Village's police station, and VPO Anna Bill walks in with a thick stack of papers.
This is just the last couple months.
She's holding a pile of Title 47s. That's a form that law enforcement uses to place involuntary holds on people who pose an immediate threat to themselves or others. Anna fills out a lot of them.
And it's a whole stack.
By Anna's count, over 50 Mountain Village residents have attempted suicide in the past year, and she's worked to save each one of them. As the community's first responder, she's also the first person to decide whether a survivor needs further mental health treatment. She gets on the phone with the Behavioral Health Department at the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation, the YK Delta's hospital. A clinician performs an assessment by phone or video conference. If a suicide survivor is still at risk, then Anna fills out a Title 47 form, and the patient is flown to Bethel's hospital for further treatment. The problem, Anna says, is that plenty of survivors are sent right back to Mountain Village. She says she's helped save children who've attempted suicide multiple times, some as young as 11 or 12, who were sent home from the hospital the same day they arrived.
But there's another one on her. Four repeats so far on just one person. Five.
That patient is receiving residential treatment now, Anna says, but she thinks she should have gotten that kind of intensive care a lot sooner.
A 15-year-old girl tried five times to commit suicide. Doesn't that scream more than help?
When a suicide survivor is titled, behavioral health workers follow a specific protocol to treat them.
Once they arrive at the hospital, the clock starts.
Jim Sweeney is YKHC's vice president of hospital services. He says behavioral health's clinicians have up to 24 hours to assess whether patients pose an immediate threat to themselves or others. As soon as they don't, Sweeney says that the hospital's legally required to release them, which is one of the reasons suicide survivors fly back to their villages so quickly. But Sweeney says that behavioral health's case managers try to keep track of these patients. They offer them counseling and psychiatric treatment, and they make follow-up calls to see if they need more help.
That happens within a few days after they leave here.
That's the way it's supposed to work. But over the past few months, KYUK has spoken to half a dozen former employees of YKHC's behavioral health department, as well as other healthcare workers who've worked closely with them. All of these sources ask to remain anonymous. They said that suicide survivors rarely receive the follow-up care they need. One former behavioral health employee said that over 90% of patients never receive a follow-up call from the department's case managers or intake coordinator. Another said that patients routinely tell them they, quote, just never heard back from the behavioral health department. When KYUK asked Jim Sweeney about this, he said he's never seen that happen.
Could it happen? Sure. We're a human system. When we hear about it, when we know about it, we reach out to that person and we make sure that it's not happening again. But I think a lot of times it's rumor, it's innuendo, it's very hard to fight a negative like that.
Former behavioral health employees also said that suicide survivors and other patients aren't required to schedule follow-up appointments before the hospital releases them, which Sweeney confirmed. That just isn't allowed at other hospitals, like North Star or the Alaska Psychiatric Institute. Ron Hale is the CEO of the Alaska Psychiatric Institute, and he says that Medicare and Medicaid require his staff to schedule follow-up appointments with patients before they can be released.
And it's just, to be honest with you, it's just good patient care.
And if you live in the villages, it can also be hard to schedule any follow-up appointments in the first place. YKHC's Jim Sweeney says that about 50% of patients who pass through behavioral health decide against doing any follow-up treatment, and behavioral health's clinicians are seriously understaffed.
It's a different life out here, and sometimes it just isn't what they expected it to be, and they don't stay with us.
YKHC is trying to fix this. They're constantly hiring and expanding, and its new facility will include more beds for cases like these. The hospital is trying to provide holistic mental health care to a remote region the size of Oregon, and that involves a lot of challenges that are out of YKHC's control. For instance, Sweeney says the hospital regularly refers patients to state hospitals for further treatment, but there's often no place to put them.
There's a statewide shortage of beds for people like that. It does happen regularly.
The Alaska Psychiatric Institute is one of those hospitals. CEO Ron Hale freely admits that his organization struggles to retain a large enough staff to care for its patients.
In order for me to provide safe staffing to the hospital, I've actually closed down 22 beds.
According to Allison Kulas, the executive director of the State Suicide Prevention Council, this all comes down to the state's budget.
I think that's a huge issue. A lot of times it does come down to funding. And I think we're in challenging times here.
In the meantime, first responders in the YK Delta's villages are doing what they can. Annabelle tells me about one woman whose life she saved a few times this year.
I go pick her up. She comes in. She gets titled. I send her off. She comes back that same day or that next day, that next week or the week after. She's attempted again. So I go back and pick her up, retitle her, resend her off. She comes back again.
In the face of all of these obstacles, Anna says, communities need to do what they can to care for suicide survivors themselves. In tomorrow's episode, we'll explore how Mountain Village is trying to do that. Reporting in Mountain Village, I'm Teresa Kotsarilis.